Okay, now our next speaker, I think, has probably the most eclectic presentation on a pretty eclectic day. So I'm very pleased to introduce Teresa Aquilina from Guy Carpenter. Teresa manages client relationships, working with clients to deliver strategic solutions for their business. She's built a wealth of knowledge within reinsurance over the last 24 years, with experience across a range of functions, underwriting, claims and broking, and she's also worked in the US and in Asia as well as in Australia. She has a very strong background, again, across a range of topics such as casualty, cyber and emerging risks, and she's now going to give the enigmatically titled talk, Other Risks. Over to you, Teresa.
Okay, is this working? Okay, thanks for the introduction. Given that this is kind of the last session of the day, energy levels do go down, so can I ask everyone just to stand up? Come, just get the blood flowing. Okay, that's it, so you can sit down now. Just to make sure everyone's awake and getting the blood flowing, so thank you for that. You feel better now? Energised? Which is great. Okay, so the topic I'm going to talk about today is emerging risks. There is a long list, and you've probably seen, of emerging risks. So we've got nanotechnology, cyber, driverless cars, climate change. I mean, there's so many of them. And emerging risks have been around for a number of years. So we go back to the days of asbestos. If we look back to what we know now, things would be different. So what I'm going to share with you today is just touching on about four emerging risks, which I think are quite current in this market, and I'm quite passionate about as well, so I have to say that. Okay, how do I use this? Okay, so the overview, I'll go through what we mean. I mentioned the four risks that I'll go through. So I will talk about driverless cars or autonomous vehicles, drones, the aging population, and e-cigarettes. So there's been a number of seminars on these topics, but hopefully you'll learn something more today. And I have a disclaimer around, I pulled some of these figures probably over a week or two ago, so things could have changed since then, because it is emerging, so things are changing by the minute. So if there's something I represent that you think, no, that's not true, or there's an autonomous vehicle out the front, then I apologise, things do move. Okay, during the topics that I'll discuss, I'll talk about the threats, the opportunities, the regulatory environment, what is now, what is happening, and just some points of the future to leave you with. Sorry, you can't see that, but that was purpose to put there. So what do we mean by emerging risks? I just looked online and just Googled around what emerging risks are, and there's a range of definitions out there. So one came up is an issue that is perceived to potentially be significant but which may not be fully understood or not allowed for in insurance terms and conditions, pricing, reserving or capital setting. The other one refers to around the black swan event. So emerging risks are large-scale events or circumstances that arise or are beyond any particular party's capacity or control. So when we think about emerging risks, we think about they do have a large scale for something to happen, but again, they could be isolated or it could be global. The other point there is around difficult to assess. Emerging risks. Some of these risks we don't really understand or know what will happen. So in terms of trying to model or put something together, an insurance product, it is quite difficult to do. And as these are ever evolving and changing and things like technology is moving so fast, how do we predict what will happen and how do we make sure that we have either products in the market or we know for an organisation what the benefits will be or not, or the threats will be, to enable us to have that in the next 5 or 10 years. And also with emerging risks as well, there's a lot of talk now about the next 5 or 10 or 15 years. It can be in the next 2 years or in the next year. So we do need to consider some of these are more prevalent now than in the future, but we also need to make sure that we are prepared for the next 20 years as well. again, areas of impact. So if we look at areas of impact, it's not just our industry, it's not just the insurance industry, it's the environment, our society. It's around, well, what is happening in the economy. So we need to really think outside of our own industry about the impact that some of these emerging risks will have. And if you have a look, I mean, all this was taken here is to say that there's a number on the right, left-hand side, cyber, and then over here we have ageing population. It's just there's a correlation between all of these risks somewhere along the line. So we heard this morning around cyber, and I mentioned driverless cars. So you put those together and there is a correlation between autonomous cars and the potential cyber threat. So there is a connection between a number of emerging risks in the market. Limited data. Yes, there's very limited data, pretty much no data in some of these risks because we just don't know what it's going to be. So we're used to, when we evaluate risk, we have past history. With emerging risks, we don't have that. So how can we model something that we haven't really seen happen in the past or don't have any numbers? And again, I'll touch on that point later, but I think one of the points that Michael made this morning was around, yeah, models aren't everything and there are other ways to look at things. So I think with emerging risks, the models are not adequate and then we need to look at certain scenario testing, for example. Okay, driverless cars. I have to say I love this topic. It's so interesting. As you can see, there's a number of categories for driverless cars. So we go through and there's different levels of automation. I mean, currently we have some level like of emergency braking or some of the, what are they called? With the rear view, reversing cameras and things like that. So we have four levels. So we have no levels of automation. Then there's some functional or specific level. There's combined functions, limited self-driving, which is an autonomous car, but it could have a wheel at it, so you could actually go and still take over the control. Or there's the full self-driving. So the picture that you see on the left here, I think that's fantastic. I mean, imagine going to work, reading the newspaper, having a coffee and no stress. So for the insurance industry, stress claims might go down. So that's what I'd pretty much be touching on. And you've probably all heard about what's happening in the US and the testing that's going on with Google, Telstra. There's a lot happening in the market at the moment about testing these vehicles, but are we there yet? And that's something that I'll touch on as well. Okay, where are we today? So I just mentioned around the testing of Google and Telstra in the US. There was some testing done, for example, in Nevada. And one of the points was around you can't just take these automated cars and put them in any environment because in the desert there was all this tumbleweed and the automated car couldn't actually work out what that was and kind of stopped. So usually you would drive through it because it thought it was a person. So again, the environment is a big factor for autonomous vehicles. And again, in China, we see like Great Wall Motors, they're doing a lot of testing and they have research centres in the US. So they're talking about having autonomous vehicles out by the year 2019-2020. But what does that mean in terms of are they going to be road ready? And I'll touch on the point of what that means a bit later on. Okay, the legislation. There's been a lot of talk, especially in the US, around some of the difficulty that Google has had in trying to convince regulators in California that some of the cars are actually ready. So I think where we are now is probably China is more ahead than the US. There is a company called, and I'm not sure how to pronounce this, Baidu. They teamed up with BMW in the US. So they've got regulatory support from the local Chinese government, which is a step forward. And with that, they want autonomous vehicles to be in China in the next few years. So there's that regulatory environment is pushing, the government is pushing to have that up and ready. And they want to be pretty much the first country to have these vehicles up and running. And again, that doesn't mean everyone will have a car. It just means that there'll be certain routes that the cars can take that they will monitor and see how they work. But again, I mean, this has moved leaps ahead than what it was 5 years ago. So, as I mentioned before, things do move very fast. Impact beyond our industry. So if we have a look at what we'd need for an autonomous vehicle, it is around, well, what is the infrastructure? Are our roads ready? I mean, we can't just take one of these vehicles and put it on a road. Would it recognise a certain lane, or would it go into the other lane? Does it recognise things like with the traffic lights? Does it recognise other vehicles? I mean, the thing is, we need to understand that we need to have the infrastructure in place and it needs to be road ready. So I think when we hear about, especially in the US, about maybe autonomous vehicles being on the road in 5 years, there's a lot more than just the vehicle itself that needs to be up and ready. Because again, there's so much, if we're going to the full automated vehicle like that picture with no wheel, the roads need to be ready for that. The other point around the last point here, the insurance market. Who's at fault? If you're not driving, I mean, if you're driving a vehicle now, and depending on what state you're in, that's if you have an accident, you have control of the wheel. If you're in a car that's fully automated, no wheel, you have no control over it, who's at fault? Are you at fault? Is a manufacturer at fault? Is a software company at fault? So again, there's a lot of questions around what it means for the industry. And that's something that, needs to be looked at and worked out, well, where does the fault lie? And that is being discussed globally at the moment as well. One of the effects that it could have on the market is there may be less of a need for motor insurance and more of a need for product liability insurance. So there's a shift from that mentality from one insurance to the other, and what exactly is it that you're looking for cover for? So we may see that. And some of the other points that you might see is, at the moment, if we look outside the insurance industry, the fines and penalties, the fines that you have from parking revenue could actually go down or could be obsolete. So there's a lot of money taken out of the governments that won't be there anymore. Because again, these vehicles, if they are fully automated, if they are in a parking destination and the time's up, they could actually pretty much drive themselves away. Some of them are remote controlled, and they have tested some of that. I think Audi tested one that was actually remote controlled and could actually, you're standing there, you call your car and it comes up and picks you up. It's just fascinating. Okay, tests carried out by Google suggested a 90% reduction in accident rates. So if we look at that, it really changes the mindset for what, as I mentioned before, around what type of insurance that we actually need. Okay, sorry, I've got to move on. How long have I got? Sorry. I'm not really looking at time. Oh, okay. Now we're speeding up here. Okay, aging population is another one. So if you look at the left-hand picture here, the aging planet, what that shows is that there's, say, proportion of people over 60 worldwide is about 11.7%, with Japan at about 32%. So one of the reasons that we're looking at ageing population is it has an effect on workforce, society, obviously insurance, and it's one area that due to medical, so at the moment all the, like, the changes in health, people are actually looking after themselves more, eating better, exercising more. As I mentioned, the advancements in medical technology is actually increasing the life expectancy. So we really need to look at what does that mean in 10 to 20 years' time and how we need to be prepared. And it's probably more focusing on life insurance as well. Sorry, I've got to speed up. So as I mentioned, impact on population and industry. So where does that sit? I mean, if you have an ageing population, there could be differences in types of insurance that is needed, and there may be more opportunities for specialist products for older people. There could also be things like, what was I going to say? Like government spending in regards to having more on the aged care facilities, things like that. So we really need to think about that. Rising healthcare costs, again, is one that is actually putting pressure, which is the second point. And as I mentioned before, potential for opportunities. So if we're looking at the ageing population, they have very different needs than what the younger generation do. So we just need to take that into account. And as I mentioned before, the life insurance. So life insurance for with an ageing population with annuities and disability insurance, protecting income streams, will likely change as well. So we need to think about the longevity globally and look at what does that mean. Okay, next one, e-cigarettes. I have to say, I have never seen anyone smoking an e-cigarette until today. It was so weird. I've never seen anyone. I don't know if anyone's seen it, but, yeah, it's quite interesting. There's a lot of controversy around e-cigarettes at the moment because they are being sold, as you can see in some of the breath of fresh air, they're being sold as a health benefit to normal tobacco cigarettes. And again, we just don't have the information and they just haven't been around long enough to know what the long-term effects are. I won't read that out. You can read it if you want. It just, as I mentioned, the evidence suggests that they're safer than regular cigarettes. And there's a lot going on at the moment around my second point, their regulation. E-cigarettes are the least regulated currently. So, as you know, with tobacco, there's certain regulation, very strict regulation around them. With e-cigarettes, it doesn't seem to be as strict at the moment. There's no warning labels. They're being sold as a healthy alternative. There seems to be no legal age restrictions either. So it's really something that is a concern and is in discussion at the moment around what to do. The chemicals. There's no, on the packaging, there's no evidence of what is actually in them. Some of them do contain nicotine. Some of them do contain quite heavy chemicals such as lithium, like with the batteries in there. And again, we don't know the long-term effects. So this is something that we really need to look at and think about. What we knew smoking caused lung cancer and that was, all out and on the packets. But e-cigarettes, we don't know what they are. And these chemicals are not healthy for are not healthy and being sold in a certain way. So again, I think this is something that as an industry, we just need to be aware of manufacturer liability. As I mentioned, there's no... I don't know where, if anything, if there was cause of it caused cancer and there were class actions put together, does it go back to the manufacturer? Not sure. I mean, they're not putting any warning labels, anything at the moment. So, and again, the World Health Organization are concerned around the lack of studies carried out and the actual ingredients and the inaccurate product labeling within e-cigarettes. And there have been a number of situations of injury around the batteries because they're charged and they've overheated and they've actually had burns to people as well. So, again, there are other hazards around e-cigarettes. So I'm running out of time, aren't I? Okay, drones. I had a few things to say on this, but I'll have to really speed up. So drones, I think, was touched on before about some of the privacy laws. So as you've probably heard around, there was an incident in London, Heathrow, a few weeks ago. With a British Airways plane as it was landing, there was a potential that a drone hit the plane, but hasn't actually been proven yet. So, again, there are definite liabilities around drones, and as the middle picture suggests, they're quite cheap. I mean, you can pick them up for $50, $100. So they're being tested at the moment, but there's still a lot of unknown around what they're being used for and how they can be used. Okay, future within the insurance industry. So currently drones are being used in, like, say, 80% of the US commercial market, mainly around for agriculture, for crop spraying and surveying. Oh, that's right. And they are actually being used for surveying in, say, real estate. Companies are using them as well. They're being used in likes of if there is a catastrophe, trying to find... look and find human life, things like that. So there is a lot of good that drones are being used for. However, there is a security risk because at the moment there have been some rules and regulations put out about when and how drones can be used. But again, the risk of these drones, and some of them are quite large on the commercial space, can go into certain areas that, potentially put a bomb on or cameras or things like that. So the security risk around how they're being used from a cyber attack, the software could be rerouted and it actually could be used as a terrorist threat. Liability. The liability around drones at the moment is not absolutely clear. I mean, where we are now, there's certain drones of a certain size or weight that are within the aviation liability. However, CASA, the Civil Aviation Safety Authority, has just put out some new laws around the use of drones. So they've put out around the size, there's certain sizes, what they can be used for. And that they've only put out, I think, this week, and it will commence in September. So that really gives some strict regulation around how they can be used and when they're to be used. There have been there's a Sydney Council that actually has banned drones to be used in any parks and playgrounds. So you will probably see, you know, when you go to parks and you see those signs with dogs with big crosses, you'll see a drone with a cross through it, maybe, eventually. The UK has also banned them in public places as well. So I think one Sydney Council doing it, we'll start to see more of that. And with the CASA rules and regulations coming out, we'll start to see more of that as well. As I mentioned before, the benefits of drones and the regulation I mentioned for Australia, the US, the FAA, the Federal Aviation Authority, have also put rules and regulations around drones in commercial areas. And I think I'm way out of time, aren't I? Okay, really. Okay, so what next? So I've got the iceberg there with risk. So there's probably a lot sitting there that we still don't know about and or understand. And I think I wanted to leave with you today around, as an industry, we need to just identify, assess, quantify what the emerging risks are, and importantly, make sure that we monitor and we keep on reviewing. Because as I mentioned before, it's always changing. Technology is moving so fast and faster than we can keep up with, or there's so many changes globally that we just need to keep thinking about. Also understand what regulators are doing, what's happening overseas as well. We can implement here and just think about what it is about the risk and what we can start doing now for the future. So how we understand and make sure that we better know what some of the opportunities are and what some of the threats are, and just make sure that, again, as an industry, we keep on presenting, we keep on talking about what these emerging risks are and keep on just making sure that it's relevant. And thank you.